With the electricity grid becoming increasingly dynamic and complex, digital technologies are no longer a nice to have. They're essential for unlocking new capabilities and enabling the energy transition. But rolling out these technologies at scale isn't just about innovation. It's about whether our systems, operational, regulatory, and organizational, are truly set up to support it. To unpack this, I'm joined by Christian Mann, Chair of the T&D Europe Working Group on Grid Digitalization and Vice President, Head of Industry Affairs at Siemens Smart Infrastructure. I'm Yusuf Latif, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Christian, it's hard to talk about the power grid right now without bringing up innovation and AI. What is hype and what's real right now?
Gosh, I don't think it's for me to say what is hype and what is real. What I do know is that there is potential in artificial intelligence. The industry has been using machine learning, which is a version of AI, for decades. It's highly advanced. What is new is generative AI, and this is something that has to establish itself, which you have to work out. You have to find out what are the actual applications, what are the use cases, where do you actually generate something that is a worthwhile business case. So there's a lot of activity going on, but given that grids are critical infrastructure, you know, a lot of it also has to be tested to see where these use cases actually work.
You recently led the study with Compass Lexicon, all about digitalizing the grid. Based on the findings, you have it here, yes?
Yes.
Based on the findings from the study, what more is required? What needs to change in regulation?
Actually, what we looked at in the study, so as chair of the working group, I frequently got confronted with the question, what does it actually mean to digitalize the grid? So we looked at what does that mean from a technology perspective. We looked at who benefits from it, because it costs money, so we need actual benefits out of it. And then we looked at the regulatory frameworks. How do they support the rollout of digital grid technologies? And all of that is available in this report. It's actually quite interesting just to... If you look at the discussions we had within T&D Europe, what is grid digitalization? It took a while. It took a couple of really tough discussions to come up with some kind of technology stack. There was common agreement that it's all about enabling advanced functionalities, grid functionalities, which you cannot access with, call it traditional technologies, which is also wrong because it's nothing really traditional. It's just digital is add-on. It's important to explain that it's not just one single technology. It's the way existing new technologies are smartly being put together to enable these functionalities. And then with these functionalities, you can access all sorts of benefits, you know, be it for customers that they have, let's say, renewable energy and more affordable, so the cost aspect of it, or for the grid operators, that they can actually operate the grid under the new conditions. Because what is changing is not so much the supply, it's the whole environment on how, you know, you have all of a sudden you have renewables, you have volatility, you have power stability issues, you have... decentralized resources, all of this comes together. So under these conditions to operate and manage the grid, that's the big difference in the future.
There is a lot changing in the system, and the study also mentions flexumers, which is a relatively new term to me. I understand prosumers, but I want to get your take on what distinguishes prosumers from flexumers and how do we enable their widespread participation operationally?
So the flexumers is, as you said, you know, we had consumers in the past and then we evolved to prosumers. And flexumers are these digitally connected agents which can... in the short period of time, either contribute or take load off the grid. And the way to enable this is digital technologies, and that makes a fluxumer. So it's a very active, digitally connected agent in the grid.
Flexibility, yeah. Prosumers almost.
Yes, flexibility, prosumer. Yes, exactly, yeah. Yes.
It's interesting because, like we said earlier, there's a lot of change happening, and we're talking about a sector that where change is relatively slow by design. From a change management lens, how do we accelerate this shift to a truly digital grid, considering the complexities of it all?
I personally, I have this theory that this is a massive change management process, which applies to anyone. It applies to you, to me, as end consumers, the grid operators, the industry players, the flexumers, prosumers, consumers. Everybody has to go through a different way of dealing with your electricity. As an end consumer, all of a sudden you have to think about, oh, is this a good time for me? Is it cheap? Or could I do a different time? Could I, you know, shift my loads or whatever? Everybody has to do it. So for me, it's a big, big change management process. And we humans do not like to change. As much as we think we're rational and we do the rational decision, we do not. We like to do what we know we can do well. So how to accelerate it from a change management process? I think it's not just change, it's the complexity of the whole thing, because you have to look at the system. You cannot just change one thing and then expect that the other things happen as well. So you have to find, you know, the right triggers for everyone. Change management, in my mind, starts with the individuals, whether they are industrial players or network operators or end consumers, doesn't matter, whoever is there. You have to become aware, you know, oh, there is renewable energy. And then you have to get the desire, I want to be part of this. You have to be able to find a convincing answer for yourself in the question, what is in it for me?
Yeah.
It could be that you say, I want to be green. You know, I want to contribute with renewables. So that triggers your switch. And then you want to know, how can I do it? And once you've reached the know, you know, you do research, education, whatever, then you go into action. And so this is one big thing where I say, you know, the whole society is changing, the whole way we manage, operate our whole world. We're going for electrification everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, just think of the example, you having a combustion engine car. And then you say, oh, this is bad for the environment. I want to go green. But, you know, there's your own process and it's your decision. And so all of this is supported by desire and access to information and being able to take your own, you know, guided decisions. So for me, that's one aspect that comes to it. By the way, a study does not talk about that because, as I said, that's just my personal interest.
Yeah, sure.
I think the study shows is the ways you can build the technology stack, you know, what it is, what are the benefits. And then it looks at, we actually had the consultants interview regulators in four countries. It looks at four different schemes. Finds.
Do you know what, can you mention what countries those
yeah,
are?
Sure, I can. It's France, Germany, UK, and Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to identify best practices of how can you deal with certain regulatory levers which are currently not being used. So one of the biggest blockers is what everybody refers to as a CapEx bias. So capital expenditures have a preferential treatment. But software investments, what we're talking about when we talk about digital, when we talk about AI also, you know, that's software. They are typically OPEX, operating expenditures. But operating expenditures are treated differently in the regulatory framework. So we looked at what can you do. Different countries have different approaches. And I think the study does a nice job of showing all of these options, because what you have in Europe, you know, you have the EU and then you have 27 member states and everyone is different.
Yeah.
And you know, there are different approaches, but I think they could learn much more. So coming to, you know, change management, even regulators have to change. So I had a conversation with a representative of the Italian regulatory agency, and they explained what they did with respect to flexibility approaches, changing certain systems. And I asked them, well, how could you do that? You know, what triggered it as a regulator? They said, oh, we had a new management and they were interested. They saw the need. So we started working with it and it works. So, you know, it's if you speak about this necessary change, it's not just the utilities, it's not just the end consumer, not just the industry, it's also the regulator, the politicians. By the way, politicians need to give us time to implement it.
Absolutely. And it's funny, there's so many different players in this mix, yes. Like you were saying, different sectors kind of coming together. And in terms of the policymakers going back to that, what do you think is the single biggest gap between how they understand digitalization versus how it actually happens on the ground?
Gosh, what a question. I think that really depends on... The biggest challenge we have right now is that all changes have to happen now, mm-hmm. and be implemented yesterday. And that is just unrealistic. I had a conversation yesterday with a representative of the European Commission, and we were talking exactly about this complexity and how, the pressure on it all. So think about it. The grid was built in the last 100 years. We're now introducing new technologies. We have regulatory frameworks. Additionally, we have new stakeholders coming in. So, you know, you speak about electrification of everything. So all of a sudden you have the e-mobility. Never had anything to do with this before. You know, they're coming in. Then you have the whole heating system coming in.
Yeah.
And you have these intersections, which up to now never had to deal with one another. And they have to find a way to...
Couple,
you know, how do we want to make this happen from a technical point of view? And then you have politics in it, and you have business interests in it, and you have a lot of misunderstanding in it. What is, I had a representative of one of the governments say, oh, all these talks about interoperability protocols, we've got OCPP, which is the standard for the e-mobility side, and so why don't we just use it for the heat pumps? You know, or I had another...
Significantly different.
Yes, but what it shows you is, and I come back to this change management, it's this understanding. Mm. It's not just, you cannot just clone from one to the other. It's actually complicated. If you think of it, developing a standard, which our industry is well worst off, takes about on average 3 years. And there you have industry experts sit in a group, I call it negotiate reality, until they come up with this is what we want to achieve and this is what is needed. It takes about 3 years, and it's a good process. Yeah, but now you have, you know, yesterday one rule, today, tomorrow the next one. So there is, I sometimes feel I spend half my time just, you know, playing ping pong, pushing the ball back in order to trying to get some kind of stability in order to be able to deliver and implement on what is done. And then, of course, you have something happening on EU level, and member states is fundamentally different.
I like what you mentioned there about negotiating reality. That's a really interesting way to phrase it. And also you bring in about managing or implementing change, working a grid on yesterday's regulation, old regulations.
Yes.
If you had a policy wish list of five things that you could change in the next 5 years in order to kind of move things forward, what would those be?
I think the first one I would say is stability, just, you know, stable frameworks in order to be able to implement and deliver, try. It's not that you can just throw any technology into the grid, you know, you have to prove. Think of it this way, the grid is the largest living machine we have, and it works through the whole of Europe. This is an asset, this is unbelievable.
It's always changing too, it's...
Yes, so the five rules, I would definitely have a look at it's an interesting discussion. I haven't actually thought quite through it, but, you know, the regulatory framework with respect to the cost and the cost accounting of things and how you can invest into something. There is the topic about the whole investment frameworks that are possible. I know there's a big push right now for looking into having AI foundational models. We need business cases for that.
Yeah.
You know, that's another one of these challenges. So standards typically get developed when there is a market. You know, somebody has an idea, starts selling it, more people come on board, then all of a sudden you realize, okay, we need some standards to make this happen on a larger scale. And now we want standards before there is a market. But standards, developing standards costs money. Mm-hmm. These are resources. And so you know, there's a lot of things happening at the same time, which is messy and complicated to maneuver when really it is about where are we heading and what are the priorities. Maybe a prioritization would help. I don't know. I don't want to be a politician at this point.
Absolutely. We're not asking you to be either. It sounds almost like you're referring to a bit of a chicken or egg situation in terms of getting policies to move, incentivizing the market. I don't know if that's accurate.
Is it a chicken and an egg? So the technology implements the market design. Yes. We have a market design. We have more things being put over. What you have right now, for example, you have all this digital regulation coming up. So the technical side of the grid, that's all. You know, we've had that forever. That's all.
Fundamental.
It's the intersections to the new stakeholder, and it's the digital aspects. And again, on the digital side, it has to fit with the rest from the technical standards point of view. But it's new. So here you have exactly the question, is there a market for this? Is there a market for whatever foundational models deliver? I don't know. And I don't want, we come back to your original question, yes. Type or reality. I actually think there is potential. I do, yes. Think. But I also think you cannot develop it, you know, in 5 seconds. It takes a little bit. Take Google.
Yeah.
How long was Google just nothing but a search engine until somebody played with the data, mm-hmm. and thought, look, here's a pattern. And somebody else said, pattern. Wow. And they started, you know, but this is not like somebody sat down and said, I'm going to develop this marketing machine, Google. Mm. You know, it started dominating,
of course.
Yes, yes. It started off as lots of inventions were discovered by accident. And I think by accident, you know, not with a goal of I want a business model for this.
Yeah.
So I think because of all these parallel topics happening, it's extremely difficult. I don't have the one single answer, you know, this is the magic wand and we fixed it all. I don't think we'd be sitting here if that were the case.
I think it's also accurate to say that there isn't one, and it's hard to imagine.
I think what would help us a lot is a little bit more harmonization across Europe. You know, not everyone having its own. The more you harmonize, the quicker you can be, the more cost-effective it is. So harmonization across everything is helpful. And then I think the other discussion I hear from lots of people is the whole skills set, because what you're having is you need a completely... I was completely wrong is maybe the wrong thing, because we need the electrical engineering, but we need the add-on. So, you know, you need either electrical engineers with IT or IT engineers with a good understanding of the electrical grid. And these resources are scarce and there's a lot of competition for them. So,
do you think that there are any risks of almost digital fragmentation where certain regions across Europe adopt advanced tools quickly while others perhaps lag behind? How could Europe avoid that scenario?
Gosh, I haven't heard of that yet.
Because you mentioned skills there, and I think it's quite pertinent where even from a company perspective, certain companies, certain institutions are going faster. And I think also regionally, it's at least in terms of adoption of AI especially,
I think it depends significantly of who you're speaking about. So
of course.
I represent call them the traditional grid technology providers, and traditional, gosh, that sounds so old-fashioned, but you know, you also have new stakeholders coming in, but they only address, if you look at the technology, the top software. They do not address the technology stack which is needed, and in our unbiased opinion, you actually need both. You mm-hmm. you cannot just analyze data without understanding what's happening in the back of the grid. So I haven't seen this, what you meant, this, you know, is there a danger that one region is more... Yeah. I think it depends on the players then you're talking about. Yes, if you speak of IT companies, if you speak as, you know, solely software, they have a different view, but that is... You know, that lacks the fundamental understanding. Data. Let's have a discussion around data, you know. What data are we actually talking about? This is one of these big words. Everybody says data, data, data. But what kind of data are you actually talking about? And I think that makes a fundamental difference. And we have, as humans, we have to develop the differentiation of what kind of data they are, and are we talking about personal data? Are we talking about machine data? Are we talking about, you know, intellectual property data? Is it just a time series without any personal connotation? Once you start differentiating on the data dimensions, I think also there you can accelerate the discussion, and then you can come to more feasible solutions, because let's be honest, even coming back to your first question, AI, AI needs data. So the whole topic of data sharing is going to be a very, very big one.
Absolutely.
And it's not easy to solve. It's definitely not easy to solve. And so there's, I think there's a lot of topics ahead of us, mm-hmm. lots of work. Who knows what else? But, you know, to come back, it all starts with a much more digital grid infrastructure. On the transmission side, we have a lot of the automation and the digital aspects. But on the distribution side, and that's where all the magic happens with all the decentralized energy resources, there is still, as you can say, room for improvement. And... you know, my hometown utility, the degree of digitalization, I can scan the manual reading and send it by email back to them.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Okay.
So I think, you know, there's... If you take that example, where is AI in that context? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the challenges we have to deal with. And let's be honest, you can come up with an AI foundational model. If there are no business models behind it, scalable ones, where you actually make money one way or the other, all stakeholders, by the way, is a big challenge for flexibility. You have so many stakeholders. If I were to use flexible tariffs, I don't know, probably 100 euros a year, should I go through that effort? But then there's all the stakeholders in there. And so again, it's another one of these, how do we scale this to make it a viable business proposition? Because without it being a business proposition, it will not fly.
I really like the way that you put that, and I think that's an excellent place to end off. Christian, thank you so much for joining us on the Energy Transitions podcast.
Well, thank you for having me here. It was a pleasure.
For more insights, join the Enlit community.